You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 513 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Fosma Moon and Seth Miller.
Good morning.
His honorable Seth Miller.
Please.
Yes, I have been sworn in. I have taken the oath of office.
Congratulations.
I am performing this podcast in my civilian capacity, not as an official act.
So, I mean, does that mean I shouldn't greet you as honorable?
We pass new ethics rules, and I still don't entirely understand them, so I'm working on it.
Dishonorable Seth Miller.
Probably not that. Probably. Again, I'm still working on understanding you all.
All right, we got some new passenger rights in play.
Maybe.
In the United States. Maybe-ish. Probably not.
Probably not. So this was... The DOT published its advanced notice of proposed rulemaking, which is a sort of whatever statutoria thing. But they are talking about setting up a parallel to EU 261 rules for U.S. operations. And it's, you know, as written, it's a lot of should we do this or should we do that? We are considering doing this. It's a lot of questions because it's a request for comment and such. But the gist of it is, domestic flights delayed or canceled or delayed more than 3 hours would be eligible for compensation, among other things. And there'd be tiers at 3 hours, 6 hours, and 9 hours. International flights would have just the 6 hour and 9 hour tiers, which sort of aligns with the prior set of rules that went into play, a month or two ago about if your flight is changed or canceled, or is changed by more than 3 hours domestically or 6 hours internationally, you're eligible to at least cancel it and get a free refund. Lots of things like that. And then there's a lot of questions about exactly how it'd be implemented, what qualifies as a under airline control, how it would be, how long does a weather delay last? If there's a thunderstorm, how long can the airline keep claiming that is the reason for the delay? All sorts of things like that. So a lot to still be worked out. And oh, by the way, during the period of the comments, I believe because it's not formally proposed yet, I don't know exactly how long the comment period is, but it is likely the comment period will either be extended and or just will close when there's a new administration in place. And so who the heck knows what's going to happen? Good times.
I mean, I don't see it. Like, we're in the comment period, right? And the comment period lasts 60 days.
So I'm not sure how long the comment period is, and it hasn't technically opened yet maybe it will this week. Because it hasn't been published yet. This is an advanced publishing, so until it's actually published in the Federal Register, comments don't open.
Gotcha. Okay. I mean, I don't see the new administration letting this go through.
No.
Is it waxing poetic? Like, was this done just as like a ding?
Well, so that's one of those things that's come up, but. It also was part, it was a requirement from Congress in the 2024 FAA reauthorization bill.
Mm.
So the DOT is basically saying we are obligated, Congress has mandated this, we are doing it. And then which is also kind of funny because there's other things Congress has mandated that the DOT has decidedly not done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's actually something came up the other day where a bunch of the airlines filed a note saying, hi, would you please actually do this thing you are legally obligated to do? It's actually also around delay codes, I believe. So similar thing, but it was one that was going to work in favor of the airlines, not against them. So they were aggressively asking, demanding that the FAA issue basically an equivalent document, but for that instead of this. There's a lot going on, but the FAA was obligated to do, the DOT was obligated to do this by congressional mandate. So cool, but I mean, also, who the hell knows with Chevron? Like, will any of that, with Chevron dead, like, will any of these things stand up to a lawsuit when it happens? Because there's going to be a lawsuit if anything gets even remotely close to passed.
Yeah.
And was there any indication if they were going to count for the size of the carrier like they do in Canada with their legislation?
That was one of the questions that was raised. And best I can tell, it seems like the answer is no. As proposed, there would not be anything other than if you fly planes that carry 30 that have 30 seats was the difference. So I think some of the EAS operators that have very small planes or a Cape Air kind of thing would be exempt. But anything JSX and up would be covered.
Even JSX, even though it's scheduled charter?
I think so.
Wow.
There's a whole bit about does charter service apply and who is the merchant of record? And apparently there's a decent number of charter type package deals where the tour operator is the merchant of record, not the operating airline. And so who then is responsible for making the payout becomes an issue in fighting over the money. Lots of fun stuff. So I don't expect this goes anywhere. But it's interesting to read about it.
You know,
the steady beat of, oh my God, this is going to raise airfares everywhere. Like tickets are going to become more expensive. And it's
bad news. Tickets are going to become more expensive, whether this happens or not. We may as well get something for it.
I joked that Bastion was probably having a stroke. So.
Yeah, he knows he doesn't have to worry about it.
Air Canada is getting even more basic economy, I guess, or basic in general.
They want to add more bag fees and seat assignment fees for basic economy tickets, basically.
And are they getting called to the transport minister's office and being asked?
Yeah, going on? Got called to the principal's office, right? Apparently they tried to do this a couple months ago also, and there was, unsurprisingly, a lot of blowback, pushback, outrage, and they put it off for a bit. I don't know. This is the whole, we end up in the discussion of what should be included and what counts as needing to be part of transport versus everything has a cost associated with it. And can we, is there a way to recover some of those costs or pass them along or use the costs as an excuse to sell a different ticket, which is the reality of basic economy, right? Airlines have said plenty of times, at least the majors, they don't want to sell basic economy. They want to use it as a reason to push you into a higher bucket.
Yeah. Do you see this as like Air Canada's way of, they can't really grow, right? Like you have a limited audience in Canada.
Well, they're adding flights from Vancouver to Manila. They're growing.
Yeah, yeah. Don't jump ahead. We'll get there.
Did I even write that in here somewhere?
No, you didn't. From a profitability standpoint, the only way to grow is to add fees, right?
No, not necessarily. I mean, they keep growing. The thing about Air Canada is the constraint they have is really their fleet at the moment. Because a lot of aircraft deliveries got delayed, but from people we know that work there, Canadians have an insatiable travel demand more so than Americans.
Really?
Yeah. And so there's no problem with filling the planes. The challenge, because I was in Canada this week when this all dropped, and so all the news was covering it, and the official response, and there's probably some truth to it, is that Air Canada is saying we're just lining up our fares with our competitors.
Mm.
Right. And so that's the other thing. It's like a WestJet or, Flair, any of the ULCCs there charge for all this stuff already. And Air Canada sort of has been, I don't want to say prevented from, but bullied into not because of their role as a sort of flag carrier for the country and.
Do you think that bullying has come from the government, or do you think that bullying has come from, other airlines or their passengers? Like, who's done the bullying?
¿Por qué no los dos, señor?
Yeah, sure.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I get it. I don't. $35 for a check bag is a bit steep, but maybe not.
It's Canadian dollars. It's cheaper than we pay here.
Yeah, fair. American Airlines and Citi. What is going on there?
The happy thruple has broken up, and they're going exclusive.
Oh, so they've got rid of who?
Barclays. The Barclays Advantage Red Card is going away as of 2026.
Interesting.
And so Citi will be the exclusive, in a 10-year deal, exclusive co-brand credit card provider. There was some surprise this hadn't happened already amongst the industry. So this is sort of long expected, long whatever. And it is finally happening. They promise that American will take over the in airport and on board merchandising for the cards as well. So there's a separate, in addition to the press release, there's a separate note sent to flight attendants informing them not to worry and to keep going ahead and selling the card on board like they always have, because Barclays is going to take care of them still through the end of that contract, and then Citi will continue to do so once the transition happens. So that exclusive offer just for this flight is not going away.
People should be careful. They shouldn't get this card, though. They shouldn't get the Barclays card, right?
Well, the city's going to absorb the business.
Oh, okay. All right.
So if I get the Barclays card, it's also going to, as part of the whole agreement, it's going to move over to city.
Wow. Okay. I didn't realize, is Barclays doing poorly? Or they don't want to be in the credit card business anymore? What?
City has way deeper pockets.
I think city wants exclusivity is what they want.
They also started talking about tightening the relationship between the Citi Thank You Points program and American. And so if you think about it, Delta and Amex have a sort of exclusive relationship where the only way to transfer points in to SkyMiles is via Amex membership rewards. You could see similar with Thank You Points. And then United and Chase Ultimate Rewards, big three each have their play.
Well, you raise a good point. One of the other aspects of this deal is you will now be able to transfer thank you points into AA points regularly.
Yeah, I mean, details TBD, but that's pretty explicitly. It's called out as an expected benefit.
Hmm.
So, there's a lot of, I think, and they say that they expect a 10% bump in annual remittance from the program just based on exclusivity. So, right, American is paying more for the pleasure of getting that exclusivity. It's still going to be short of Delta's Amex deal, but they expect it to grow once that is sorted. Hmm. You know, once the initial exclusivity happens, they expect further growth from there.
Yeah, do you guys think we should be locked into airline credit cards? I feel like that's...
I haven't been in years.
Yeah.
I think airline credit cards and hotel credit cards are stupid.
Well, let's put a caveat on that. There are a couple areas where having one might make sense. Generally speaking, large spend on them for the purpose of accruing points for redemption is less so.
Well, I would argue that it is worthwhile having an airline credit card for the benefits of the card.
Right.
But earning the points on them is useless. So like my United card, I pay my annual fee and occasionally I'll use it at the airport because I get on board because I'll get some money off. But that's it. That's the only charges United will see on that credit card.
Yeah. Right. And but in some scenarios, that's enough for United, right? They get their annual fee. They get their annual fee share and whatever. They'd want more spend on it, but they'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, but one
exception I would say is there are a few cards that allow for status earning at reasonable rates that might make sense for some people. I use the JetBlue card for that.
Yeah. There's definitely some outliers. Like I think the Aeroplan card is a decent card. Particularly for the cost that they charge you, but as a whole, earning the bigger problem is what's happening with the airline points. Right, this is why I don't need any more United points. They keep jacking up rates, inventory keeps going down. It's getting harder and harder to use them, and that's pretty much the case for most of the airlines.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like I said, we could debate whether I should keep pursuing Mosaic status with JetBlue. There's some minimal value I get out of it that arguably justifies putting credit cards and other spend in certain places. But between life, I already have lifetime United status, so I don't need to earn that again. And I'm not going to. That's the other thing is like my travel habits. I am never going to natively earn status based on a program that has a spend minimum. It's just not happening.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, how do you. Here's the thing I think is what's disappointing is when you fly these new, we talked about this a little bit last time, when you fly some of these new carriers that have bundled business class and you don't have lounge access as part of your business class ticket.
Yeah.
I think it starts getting into a weird space where you're kind of, I don't know, you're annoyed, because part of the benefit of flying business class is having access to the lounge. I don't
know. Yeah. What I would say is, depending on various things, one might also have lounge access, maybe not to the airline lounge, but a third-party lounge through a credit card.
True.
Right? I don't need specific airline lounge access at Boston, generally speaking, because the Chase lounge there is quite nice, and I spend most of my time in it, regardless of when I'm flying out.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
For example. So, or I get there at a reasonable amount of time. You know, at a closer to my departure time and don't go to a lounge and don't worry about it. But let's be honest, you know, it depends.
Is Boston now connected behind security across all the terminals?
Everything but A.
Okay.
And I don't fly too much domestic Delta, so it's okay.
Yeah, fair enough.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, it's, there's, I see what you're saying about the lounge access and it, you know, how do you deal with that and, you know, basic business and all those things in the cards. But it's,
Well, I don't know that the card actually helps you, right? Because if
but also, and like you're talking about status, but like, didn't Delta pull that out of status for some of its members?
Yeah.
And Delta Gold doesn't get access to Delta lounges on international anymore?
That's correct. Do they get Sky Club? I don't remember.
That was the whole thing is like, they pulled it, even though your Sky Team Elite, whatever, Elite Plus, whatever the tier is that was supposed to get lounge access, you don't get it anymore on international and Delta metal. You get it on other metal.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's stupid. I mean, and that's kind of this thing is like, you're seeing this like their problem is like overcrowding. I don't think, you know, airlines like Qatar or, you know, some of these other airlines that are debundling or bundling business class fares are seeing issues with access, like people not being able to get in because it's overcrowded. I think they're doing it just for the little bit of incremental cash. And I think that's like it's a negative because a card doesn't get around that, right? Maybe in Doha, you have a priority pass lounge you can go to with a shower, but I don't know. The reason I bring this up is the next topic that you had, which is Lufthansa Allegris pricing.
So this is they finally have a schedule by which they will have enough planes with the new cabins on them that they can start selling the seats. So the first couple Allegris planes are flying with sort of surprise and delight, pick a seat, hope you get the one you want. From the end of March 2025, San Francisco, Chicago, and Shanghai will be the first three routes where you are guaranteed an Allegris aircraft. And actually on their website, you know, in the search grid results, it says like Allegris experience. They're highlighting it on the flights that have it. And they've got pricing now. So roughly half-ish of the seats are considered regular seats and are just available. And then the other half are either, they're calling them privacy seats, which are also known as window seats. And you could argue that the aisle-ish, you know, because it's a stagger.
Yep.
The aisle-ish window seat still has a window, but you're separated further from it. But that one's free. But the sort of one closer to the window that we would consider an A or a K, I guess, seat typically will come with a fee. Starting at €100 for a window seat. There's the extra space seat, also known as the throne seat, which they say is good for business travelers who, you know, want extra space to have desk space to work, which I also still don't really understand how that works since the desk isn't really, you're not facing it. It's whatever. And then the extra long bed, those all, you know, go up to, you know, starting at 100 up to 130 or €160, something like that. And then the bulkhead row mini suite, is €400 extra. And then if you're flying in first and want the double bed, if you're only a single passenger, it starts at €1,900. And I'm saying starts at the ones I spot checked were all 30 to 40% more expensive than these numbers. So I think that was like €2,900 extra for the first class suite. And if you're two passengers, you have to call them to book it. You can't do it online if you want the discount.
Seems extremely expensive for picking a seat up front.
Yeah, I go back and forth on this. Like, what has Swiss charged for the throne seat for so long? It's got to have been 100 francs or so, right? About $100 at least?
About $100, yeah, probably.
Right? Like, BA has charged $80 to $150 for seat assignments in club world for a decade now, it seems. So it is annoying and it is crappy and it sucks and whatever, but it's also not new.
I'm talking more about the suite plus and first, like €1,900.
That's high.
Like, I mean, I guess if you're paying $10,000 for the F trip, what's another like 2000? I don't know. Like, what is that? $2,900 US.
Yeah.
That's, I guess it's nothing. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. One I looked up, I think was Chicago, Munich, and was like, it was 14 grand to start. So one way, whatever, but.
And I'm guessing how does this work? You think on, rewards? Is it that you think it's the same pricing? Like if you have a United reward and you book a Lufthansa flight with the Allegris seats, they're going to charge.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. This is kind of what I'm talking about. Like, I just want a business class seat. Like, I don't understand why I'm there for the life lap bed. I'll take, what if one of these isn't available? One of these free ones, you know?
So what if, you know, there's no seats available in economy class and you're a regular passenger, you at the gate, you get assigned economy plus, right? Like, you're not going to get offloaded for not paying, but the airline certainly is going to try to get money out of anyone they can who, you know, wants an assigned seat and wants to know what they're getting before they get there. And then we'll give away the assigned seat. So there is the chance that, you know,
a last minute purchase or whatever, if people haven't bought it already, you are more likely to get the mini suite.
Yeah.
Potentially, or things like that. So it's not good, but it's where we are and where we've been is sort of where I've settled on this. Like, I don't like it, but it's hard to hate it too much just because, you know.
What do you mean it's where we've been?
There are airlines who have been charging for seat assignments, even in premium cabins, for some time now. And the writing has been on the wall that is definitely where things are going. I mean, even Delta's segmentation of premium cabin stuff and how that's going to play out, or any cabin stuff, like good, better, best, even on board. Like, it is clear that the airline industry, Virgin Atlantic charges for its bulkhead row. Condor charges for its bulkhead row with these mini suite type solutions. So, like, it's definitely the trend that is happening.
No, I'm with you. Like, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. What I'm saying is, like, it seems wild to me that now we're charging for slightly different seats in the same cabin rather than there's a notice. It's the bulkhead. You know, that to me is where I'm like, I don't know about this. This just, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
It just feels like, again, this, like, it's a cheapening of the entire experience.
Well, or an expensive-ening.
Maybe
how you look at it, but yeah.
When I say cheapening, it feels like you're nickel and diming me for something.
It makes the experience feel less good, but it costs more to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that, that's a good way to put it. So I'm just, I don't know. I'm not a fan.
No.
What else we got? Let's talk about Iceland Air getting its first 321LR.
They are now an Airbus operator. Huzzah. It's been a while.
Jason Rabinowitz, our friend of the show, posted a comment from the, I think it was the Iceland Air CEO, about how much nicer it is than the 737.
It was a flight attendant.
Yeah, it was a flight attendant. That might have been the funniest comment I've read.
Yeah. Listen, their 75s are a little long in the tooth, and as a flight attendant, I could understand the appeal of it. Honestly, as a passenger, there's certainly parts of it I understand the appeal of as well, right? Like, you got a slightly wider seat. Admittedly, it's the newer, it is a newer seat. They went with Gevin, which is a, I think, Italian company. Doesn't have a particularly large market share. So it'll be interesting. And I think both the Saga class, which is the premium economy, and the economy seats are relatively new to the market. So it'll be interesting to see how they play in the, for passengers, how well they're received and how comfortable they are over time. It is the first plane flying with Panasonic Avionics Astrova in-flight entertainment system, which is its latest generation stuff. So that's supposed to have sort of some nifty features and just more responsive screens, better user experience, throughout. Viasat Internet, where the old 757s had the Anuvu service. So, you know, is one better than the other? We'll see. You know, part of that depends on how much they were willing to pay, but
yeah.
And license, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I get it. Like, being annoyed at the overall 757 experience as a flight attendant makes a lot of sense to me. They're old and not recently refreshed.
Their comment was about the MAX.
Oh. Well, those aren't old and they weren't refreshed, but so it's the same Wi-Fi, so other things are different.
I think it's mostly just from a usability perspective, it might be a little bit better for the flight attendants. I don't know.
Ryan touched with galley space and things like that.
Yeah.
Layout.
Yep.
So,
I mean, it's cool. We're going to get the LRs, or what we're going to get here in Portland. I think Seattle's going to get them too.
Yeah.
So, that's definitely like the 757 replacement for us.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in the bonus topics of comparing 737s and the LR/XLR product lines. There's some interesting thoughts on what can it really replace, but I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Last topic for the main show today. First class is coming to Frontier.
Well, you know, we tried Eurobiz, and because it was quick and easy to set up, basically just block a seat and walk away. Turns out they think they can do even better than that by swapping out those seats for a proper 2-2 configuration.
Hmm.
I don't get this, but, you know.
Next, we'll have an airline that says we're going to do all first class in our domestic fleet.
And we'll call them, what's the one out of Dallas?
I don't know.
Republic or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
It went under in like 2000?
Yeah, exactly. So
They want to do free seat upgrades for their elite members.
Yeah. So whatever. Two rows of it. Debatable how much room there is up there, and if they're going to repitch everything else or just swap out the existing extra legroom seats with these, you know, first class seats. Generally speaking, the seats take up more space. So you might arguably lose an inch or two of pitch because the seats go in the same physical space. So that'll be interesting to see. Or you won't lose pitch. You'll lose personal space.
Yeah.
But it does sound like they're swapping out upfront plus for these seats, not adding, you know, extra. And then they're doing a whole bunch of stuff with the loyalty program. They're constantly tweaking it. They're constantly running promotions. They're constantly trying to get people locked in. And I think, you know, Brett Snyder wrote a piece. Is like, I mean, you can get in on it. You can get the elite status, but like, there's a status match and there's a promotion and a this and that. But like, once you're in, you got to spend a lot of money on Frontier to keep it. And you can do it on the credit card there. So similar to JetBlue, credit card spend there counts as status.
Yep.
But, and you know, there's some real benefits in terms of free bags and free seat assignments and potentially upgrades. But, you know, when compared to Delta talking about being at a 75% paid load factor in first and not wanting to have upgrades, there's no way Frontier wants to give these away as upgrades, right? Frontier absolutely wants to sell this shit.
Yeah.
So how do you reconcile like, oh, this is going to be great. Free upgrades for everybody. No details on when and how and what the rules will be about it. Arguably the coolest thing about the loyalty change this time around is companion pass for Platinum and Diamond tier.
Okay.
And it's, you know, similar to Southwest, you just pay taxes and you pay government taxes and fees, not airline taxes, not airline fees, but unlike Southwest, you just put a new passenger name in on the booking with you. You don't have to designate a companion.
Hmm.
So it's truly flexible. You know, let's say hypothetically you bought a lifetime pass on United that also allowed for a companion and you were constantly changing it, and then they decided you were selling those and abusing the program and revoked your lifetime pass. Hypothetically speaking, it's your, they won't do that.
Too soon? I think that's cool that they let you change in every flight. How many people travel with different people all the time? Like I travel with the same people all the time.
I could see it being slightly useful in a business scenario.
Okay.
Boss takes different people on different sales calls depending on region.
I think if your boss is buying you flights on Frontier, you should find another job, but,
Actually, Frontier and Spirit, to an extent, have done good business with small businesses.
Fair. I'm crapping where I know.
And I would argue that, like, Frontier offers a unique product in that they serve a lot of these secondary airports.
Yeah.
So
if you live in Denver and can get nonstops to so many places.
I mean, candidly, if I had to go to Raleigh or Atlanta, I would seriously consider taking Frontier because Trenton's 7 minutes from my house.
Yeah. I don't know why you wouldn't. I mean, time of day and schedule.
Yeah,
or way of week scheduling, right? But
yeah, it's like I might not like need to go for 3 days,
right? A 6 hour meeting or 3 hour meeting, and you're stuck for 3 days because you can't get home.
Exactly.
Sorry, sir. We only fly on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Well, I guess I'll come back next week. Yeah, I know. I shouldn't.
Right. No, there are plenty of reasons to not use them as an operator and the limits about scheduling and reliability and recoverability and all those things, but. These days when the price is right, I could certainly see that as an excuse, or a reason to take advantage of this benefit. Also, part of it is just that they're advertising a benefit that very few people will take advantage of. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Just like with all the other companion passes, you can't use it to guarantee yourself an empty middle seat. You got to have a real person there.
Yeah. We got a bunch to talk about the bonus show. Should we jump to that?
Okay. I was just going to comment, right? The empty middle seat is a potential new revenue stream for airlines. I just don't know why they don't market that.
Well, I mean, they sort of have tried. Some do. They have tried. Some of them have tried better than others. This was what Upfront Plus was. Now, you could do it blocked middle seat in all the way in the back, which is arguably more valuable than blocked middle seat up front where you have plenty of space. But, some airlines sell it and let you book extra seat and you just have to like know the set special code to put in while you're booking. But they won't let you do it for this freebie.
Yeah. I mean, but where the airlines fall, like with United, right? Like most of the airlines, you won't earn anything on it. If I'm paying you, then let me earn miles on it.
I thought at one point United was letting people earn for the cello.
I didn't think so.
No.
What about, do you guys remember when United used to fill the plane? Like when they would do the people who didn't have seat assignments, they would fill it and leave the middles open next to one case?
Yeah.
The good old days.
Well, you ever
for? I benefited from that.
Yeah, it wasn't just 1K. It was anyone Premier exactly.
Yeah, Stargold. Yeah. Stargold benefit on Ethiopian, like unpublished, but I did when I did my Bangkok to Newark via Addis and Lome, I think, for the long flight from Lome to Newark, I got an empty.
And that, I mean, I think that still exists on some carriers, but on United, it's definitely dead. So
no, United's still doing the brain dead front to back.
30, you know, someone who is on basic economy gets a seat.
An E plus. Yeah.
Yep. Listen, every decade or so, they say, oh, we'll stop doing that and be nice to our elites. And then somewhere along the line, some system gets updated and it seems like they stop.
Some system gets updated or reverted?
Yeah, that's my
All right. For our Patreon subscribers, we got some talk about cameras and how they're on board and everywhere. Boeing and DOJ have a deal that was killed because of DEI. They're not also, Boeing's not building Max again yet. They're not building any Max planes.
Nope.
And then interesting XLR 757 comparisons that Seth mentioned earlier. Some fun new tap routes. Tulum, we're going to talk about Tulum. Bitcoin in the sky. And I want to talk about Avis if we have time. So
we try harder.
Yeah. So stick around if you're a Patreon subscriber. If not, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. Leave us a tweet, leave us a comment or a blue sky. What do we call them? Blue sky notes. Are they bleats? I don't know.
Leave it as the derogatory term.
Oh, God. Leave us a note on Blue Sky if you want. Send us an email. We'd like to hear from you. We'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care. Did me and Foz talk over each other again?
Yeah. Yep.